Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Blue Jay Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. The Jays had their homestand, and they were very successful. Three series wins. Let's get into it.
Turn up your volume, because you're about to listen to the Sick Podcast. Blue Jays Center.
Bautista drives it deep left field.
The sickest Toronto Blue Jays podcast. It's gonna be sick.
Welcome back. Cole Whiston, Rob Pantalamon, and James Price here with you again to talk Blue Jays baseball. We have a packed show for you today, and it starts with a pretty special edition of a new segment that I like to call Professor's Lesson. And that's myself, as you'll find out when watching our show, whether it's previous shows or shows going forward. So the boys got their notebooks ready. I have a lesson for the fans. The Jays are one game above 500. They have the fifth lowest runs per game and OPS in their entire franchise history. Their fifth starter only has one win. They haven't had Swanson and Romano for basically the entire season so far. They've had a tough schedule. The stars aren't hitting. Gausman's had two bad starts, and with runners in scoring position, oh yeah, we're 28th in the league. Last year we were 20th, to put that in perspective. And Jays fans should recognize that we are 10-9 with all of those things. We're 10-9. All of those things that are not going to continue. The Jays are 10-9 off the heels of three series win at home. Let's put this into perspective. The start to this season that the Jays have had, yes, has been pretty much a brutal watch. But guess what? Everything trends upwards. And that is Professor's Lesson.
Holy smokes, Professor. What? I mean, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't have
on the first day
for dialed in, because class is in session. Holy smokes, that was dialed in. You know what? I mean, you're right. I gotta be honest. Everyone went into the season with just have pitchforks ready to go, right? And everything small that goes wrong, yeah, they're ready to just go bananas. When things go right, they find the negatives out of that. So, yeah, 10-9, you're 3-3 against the Yankees. You split 2-2 against the Rays. You've beaten the Mariners. Yeah, you lost to Houston, but whatever. It's the second series of the damn season. I know, you look at it in hindsight, you look at it in the longevity of things, it's not a bad start. It really isn't. We know their awful start against the AL East last season. So far, they're 500, which I think we all take when you've played six against the Yankees and four against the Rays.
Yeah, today is going to be, you know, a relatively negative show. And that's why I wanted to put it all out there. Before we get into all the negativity, there's not a whole lot to be negative about, to be honest, when you look at a big picture.
No, absolutely. I think, well, yesterday's game in particular was just a really annoying one. You had a chance there to sweep the Yankees, and just sweeping the Yankees this early in the season would have put such a stamp of approval on this team from all the Blue Jays fans. It just sweeping anybody, but especially a team like that at home, I mean, that would have really gotten the fans excited. But yeah, I think 360 view, you have to look back. Like you guys mentioned, you won all three series. You came into this series. The offense wasn't great, but it was, I will say, not the fun to watch part, as in not a lot of bombs except for Dalton Varsho. That part wasn't there, but the process has been great. I feel like the at bats have been super competitive. They've made all these Yankees pitchers work. I feel like it's not as if they went up there and just completely gave in. Like they didn't score a ton of runs, but I thought the process was good, even for some of the regression candidates, positive regression candidates. I thought that they made major strides in this series, and most importantly, what we talked about at the end of last episode was Chris Bassett and Kevin Gausman, how big it would be for those guys to go out there and have a good start against the Yankees. Like, to me, both them giving you A-plus outings, that was huge. So I think all in all, at this stage, you can't help but be positive based on the results.
Yeah. Let's get into it. I'm going to set up the rest of the show. Hold on, James. We'll get right into it right after I finish up the show. We're recapping the Yankees, obviously, to start. We got Stat Genius, as always. We got On the Farm, as always. And then we finish off with previewing the Padres. Let's get into the Yankees series, James.
Oh, boy. Well, fellas, I mean, you won 2-3. And the Bassett Hound in game one was remarkable. Watching that guy pitch, fellas, if you're a freak show baseball fan, he's a treat. Yeah. It is a absolute treat watching this guy manipulate the clock.
It's a movie.
Oh, is it? No.
Yeah, it's a buzzword.
It's like, oh, God, I just got shivers down my spine with that one. But no, it really is, though. I mean, you never know what you're going to get. He's going to throw, yeah, he'll throw 94 right down the middle on Aaron Judge, but he's thinking something else is coming. He'll swing right through it. And then he'll throw you like a 65 mile an hour breaking ball, but he'll dump it in for a strike. And then he'll sit there on the mound and look like he doesn't want to be there.
As if he just ran a marathon.
Oh, yeah. He looks awful out there. But he doesn't care because he's going to dice. And he was outstanding. Then you move to the next day. Kikuchi, yet again, his Yankees dominance continues. He was electric, had a little bit of a side issue. And they came out twice to talk to him. I did this. And I'm like, you can only see one. Twice to see him. That's stupid. Both times, you know, he waved them off. And it was a very interesting situation because he was facing Soto, then gave up a single. And you're like, okay, are you sure you're okay?
Right.
And then he goes 1-2-3 after that. And you're like, boy, yeah, he has a dog.
Top five in Ks per nine so far this year in all of baseball.
And I think he earlier this season – I can't remember if it was his last start or I think it might have actually been his last start. He had 9 Ks, which was like tied or it was his Blue Jays high. He had 9 again.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like he has been electric. And let's go to Kevin Gausman. Like, better. Like,
huge.
I think that's one word I'm going to use. Pitch count got really high. The command did elude him at times, but much, much better. 5 innings and 1 run ball against the Yankees. You can't complain. And offensively, yeah, you got enough, right? Like, let's be honest here. He got enough to win baseball games. And you mentioned earlier, Cole, you know, getting on base. I think maybe Rob mentioned that. They're what, top 5, top 10 in the league in walks? Like,
yeah,
their approaches are credible. They watched, we watched them face Carlos Rodon. Dude was sweating by the second inning.
Yeah. I mean, you look across the board. Yeah, you look across the board again this year, just like you look across the board last year. This Jays team is top 10 in offensive categories. Just the raw numbers, not the underlying ones.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway from this is I think one of the bigger narratives coming into the season, this extends a little more past the Yankee series, a little bit into that Colorado series. You had great starts from all of 5 of your rotation slots, last 5 games.
Right.
And I think one of the biggest worries was coming to the season, we all said, look, there's reason to believe that this offense will be better, but there's also kind of reason to think maybe the pitching won't be so good. And a big part of that is because it was so good last year that there was just nowhere to go but down. And so far, you look at it, Kikuchi has been terrific. Jose Berríos, like both of those guys who had big years last year. Remember last year at this time, what we were saying about them? Like, can they just be competent big league starters? That would be massive. They've both been terrific. Chris Bassett had a little bit of a slow start, but I think these last two outings have been really positive. He's trending in the right direction. And Kevin Gausman, yesterday, that was a really, really positive step, in my opinion. I think our buddy Ben Nicholson-Smith mentioned on 590 this morning, he was mentioning how you need kind of a 4-week ramp up to spring training. And now we're not even at the 4-week mark yet for Kevin Gausman. So the fact that he's already, I mean, we know he was struggling before last start, but he had a good one against the Yankees. If he has another good one against the Royals, all of a sudden, now that's, you passed the 4-week ramp up, that's coming off 2 good starts. There's no reason to believe why he can't be just as dominant as he was all the other years. So, and then obviously the fifth start, the Yariel Rodriguez / Bowden Francis, that one looked good. We only hit a small sample, so that one we'll probably monitor a bit more. But yeah, I think the regression beast in terms of the rotation, so far so good. The rotation looks A-okay to me. It looks pretty dominant this last cycle.
Yeah, and that's what I said on one of the post-game shows this week, is that, you know, all of indications were career highs for most of our pitching staff, and to even come into the season and even think about expecting that again was just, you know, not logical. And then Kikuchi was at the top of that list in terms of guys that were, you know, we looked at likely positive regression guys this year, you know, guys like Alejandro Kirk and Dalton Varsho. He was at the top of the list of the opposite of likely regression candidates. He was probably at the top of the list for Toronto Blue Jays fans. So the fact that he's not only looked just as good as he was last year, he has looked even better than he was last year so far to start 2024. And I want to talk about...
Sorry, one more point there, Professor, on Kikuchi. Because that was one thing. I was buying into the Kikuchi stock. I didn't think he was one of those guys that was a regression candidate necessarily, because to me, I've always felt as though he was a guy who always had the stuff. It just had to be unlocked. And whether it's a combination of Pete Walker, and the pitching changes with the pitch clock. That combination, I feel like it's really unlocked his potential. I mean, he looks fantastic, and we knew that he could always be that guy. There was a lot of hype from him when he came to the big leagues back in 2019 when he signed with Seattle, and the hope was that, look, this guy's got incredible stuff. How can they harness it and make him a viable, maybe not front end, but a very effective major league starter? And it looks like the Blue Jays and Pete Walker may have found the secret sauce.
You know, it's incredible. I mean, we all knew after the first year, command is the big thing for Kikuchi.
Yep.
And it's also confidence, guys. I mean, it's confidence with him and the pitch clock. My God, did that help him? You can't overthink it. You can't think too much about the last one. Get it and go. Yeah. And it's working for him, boys. He's pounding the zone. He's confident with his fastball. I think that's a big thing for him, right? It's the same with every pitcher. If you can command your fastball, it's night and day. We talked about it with Barrios in the last episode where we talked about, you know, his sinker command. Like, that, it sets up everything else.
Yep.
And, boys, watching Kikuchi pitch, it's kind of a treat now. It's not more one of those, oh, God, is he going to blow up? It's more like, nah, get your popcorn ready. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. With a 6-3 homestand, I'm gonna, you know, do this recapping Yankees series in a positive sandwich, a compliment sandwich, as some would say. So we started with a compliment with all the pitching. Now let's get into, you know, the meat of the sandwich, a bit of a negative point of thing. We'll talk about the offense, which we'll have both, and then we'll talk about the returns of Danny Jansen, Eric Swanson, and Jordan Romano. Obviously, at the top of that list in terms of negativity is Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson. Jordan Romano comes in the second game into a save situation, which we will have a conversation about. Doesn't look great, but, you know, for some, he never really does. He just gets the job done, and that's what happened. He did get the job done, closing out the game, getting the W. Eric Swanson tries to do the exact same thing the night after, and he fails to do so pretty horribly, actually. Has to get relieved out of the inning to try to finally get three outs, and eventually the Jays lose that game after coming into it with a two-run lead. Rob, I'm going to go with you first because you were one of the people, one of the few in our group chat, I would say, that liked and wanted Jordan Romano to come into the save situation in game two.
Yeah, I think you have 26 roster spots, meaning that every roster spot is valuable. If you're going to use up a roster spot, you can't have unissuable spots. You can't operate like that in the major leagues. And to me, once the Blue Jays activated Jordan Romano, that's a stamp of approval that here you go. This guy's ready. He's ready to be his role. And his role is a closer. He's been one of the best closers in all of baseball the last almost half decade now. Mm-hmm. And if you caught it in a save situation, like to me, if he's not ready to go out there and give you a good inning in a save situation, then to me, why did you activate him? We're probably going to talk about Nate Pearson at some point. He's a guy who factors into leverage arms, and he's been a really good pitcher so far this season. He's looked really good, especially in his last start when he threw 102 and struck out the side. So to me, if you're going to hamstring your roster by bringing in an injured guy, to me, that's very poor process. That's very poor roster management. So yeah, no, to me, if you're healthy and you're good to go, you got to be in there. You got to be in there ready to do your job. And his job is to get the ninth inning. So that's why I didn't have a problem with it. Now, if he is hurt and he's not all 100%, then yeah, I have a major problem with throwing him out there in a two-run game. But to me, that's how I look at it. If you activate him, he's good to go. He's between the lines. He's judged accordingly. That's my thought process.
And that's the one thing that frustrates me about hearing family. So, no, ease him in. Well, then why is he here? Like, I'm sorry.
But hold on, because I am one of those people that said ease him in. Kevin Gausman.
But who's your other option there?
Cabby. Cabby was the guy. Cabby. Yeah, two lefties. Yeah, two lefties coming up in the ninth inning.
What was your point about Kevin Gausman? Like, he got eased in.
No, but he got eased in.
He's making starts.
No, but you said who? You said because he's making starts, but also while being eased in. I said that had it been a non-save situation, Jordan Romano should come in. Four-run game, which is what it was before the situation came up. Then I would have had no problem with Jordan Romano being in. But that was my point, is a guy that hasn't pitched once this year in a game that we are trying to win against a division rival, easing him in is exactly what I would have wanted. And how about this? If you want to hold the opinion of, you know, it's your role, then you got to be ready, right? Which is fine. I'm okay with that theory. Game three, Eric Swanson. His role is to be the backup to Jordan Romano. Jordan Romano is unavailable. He comes into a safe situation. I found a lot more people that liked the Jordan Romano move, didn't like the Eric Swanson move. Where did you guys sit?
I was one of those. I didn't like Swan. I mean, look, okay.
Let See, that's my problem.
Hold on. Let me put it this way. They did not have anybody. And this is the look. I'm okay with Eric Swanson going out there to start the inning. Fine. But you got to have somebody ready to go because, one, he is not there to be your closer. I understand that he is the second to Romano. I get that. Sure. But he is not your closer. We have seen in the past, LA Nightmares of last year.
We were there in LA last
year. LA Nightmare of last season where it was just a complete debacle. And your only guy to go to was Mitch White in that situation, and it was cooked. Done. And I understand. You have Swanson out there. Sure. You got to have somebody ready. And I get it. Tim Mesa is like, it's okay. I don't agree with that move either. And I know Rob is on the other side of this thing, but for the love of God, I hate the analytics side of this thing where, oh, Jimmy Garcia can't go a
Me
third
too.
Day in a row.
Yep,
he
I
can't
agree.
Go a third day in a row. What are we doing in this sport, guys? Honest to God, if you want to throw Jimmy in the most highest leverage situation, there's Aaron Judge. Bases loaded, tying runs there. Go ahead run is right there at third base.
Yep.
Get him out. And you're letting Tim Mesa. We all knew it was over when Mesa was on the mound and we had to face Aaron. You knew it was over.
Yep.
And for Jimmy Garcia, who threw a total of 20 pitches in the last two games combined, yet earlier in the year, you go to the two games in Seattle against Seattle. Really, how interesting. You combine Chad Green's two outings. He threw 50 pitches almost. And that's okay.
God forbid.
Can't pitch
and here's the thing. Here's the other thing. If Rob's going to say, and he is right when he says it, he's going to say it never happens. It doesn't never happen. It just rarely happens. Liam Hendricks is probably at the top of the list when it comes to guys that proves to you it can happen. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to say that. Yeah, that's not a thing. Like pitching 3 days in April, like, no. It's not a John Schneider.
You call it curtains. You're like, okay, you're just going to give this game away to the Yankees. Good on them. Here you go.
Well, no. Yeah. Hey, hang on, guys. It's not giving it away. Wasn't Eric Swanson a reliever that you trade an everyday player for, an everyday power bat for?
Look, I'm not disagreeing with that.
No. Yeah. And Eric Swanson does need to do his job, but we talk about favorable matchups all the time, putting guys in place to succeed.
Right, but this is, you understand, this is when four guys are unavailable, you have to tweak the script. Like, it's not as if, Jimmy Garcia is available there. Jimmy Garcia has to pitch.
That's the thing that really pisses me off. Is like we look at the situation and like for example, Chad Green's what, 38 now, something like that.
Yeah,
and he was not healthy.
That old?
He's not that old. He's like 35. But
he looked it. Let's be honest, fellas. Anyways, but either way, here he threw 25 pitches in one game against Seattle. Lots of stress. Barely hung on to the save. And he goes out there the next day and drops another 25 pitches. And I understand, like, it 2 days in a row, it's fine. It's not in the analytics and all this nonsense. Jimmy Garcia threw 9 pitches and 11 pitches stress behind any of it.
And that's the thing. Is like, you're going to tell me that the analytics say that the third day is a bigger kryptonite than 50 pitches within 2 days.
No. It's an apples to orange comparison because when you pitch, every day you get up and you're pitching that day, the routine, the stress you put on your body to get up and get ramped up, it's not the same. Throwing 50 pitches across 2 days is not the equivalent of throwing 40 pitches or 30 pitches across 3 days. It's just not. It's not like the routine. And here's the thing. This is all this stuff is not made up on the fly. Before the game starts, the game that could be 12-0 for all you know, the pitcher's unavailable. Like it's not as if John Schneider's sitting there. It's like, oh, it's a close game. Let's get Jimmy Garcia. Let's give him the green check mark. You know, that's just how it works, guys. I get it. It's frustrating.
No, it's a problem with the game.
You're blaming John.
It's how it is.
I'm not blaming John. Yeah. Because
I get that. I know you're not blaming John, but I'm just saying it's just there for this to be like a change. There has to be like a total shift about the entirety of the sport. Like it's not changing. Is my point.
No, that's the frustrating part about this is that you.
I mean, you can put it on. You can put it on Greg's on Sunday roast, but it's not changing.
I don't know. I just look at the situation. I'm like, let him face one guy. I'll bet you can't do that. He has faced three guys, I guess, in that statement.
Yeah.
But intentionally walk the next two guys to get him out of there. I don't know. If you really don't want to pitch him the third day, let him face Judge, and you could win a ball game. I mean, what's the saying we always hear? You play to win that game that day, right?
Yeah.
And you didn't. And you lost.
Yeah. But you can't, though. You can't play to win every individual game in 162 game season.
Every game against the Yankees is worth double. It's worth double. You could have had a 4-2 record against the Yankees to start the season, which is incredible. Now you're sitting 3-3. It's not bad by any means. We talked about it off the top of the show. But now we're at 4-2. You had a chance to sweep them. You mentioned off the top, Rob, like you had a chance to sweep, and it would have put a statement on early in the season. And because of the don't throw them out for 3 days in a row, you threw it away. And sure, Eric Swanson.
Here's my gripe.
You knew Eric Swanson was not good enough in that inning. You knew it was curtains. You knew it was
this. But this full on bluff on the Jordan Romano stuff, which I agree with bluffing. Obviously, you can't just come out and say before the game that he's unavailable. But to the point of Rob and why he went in game two is because he was called up because he was healthy. Apparently, because he's 100%. Well, 100% Jordan Romano. That's my 100% Jordan Romano can pitch 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
And here's my gripe. Here's my main gripe. It's that one is obviously you can just blame Eric Swanson. Yeah, buddy, you need to do your job. You need to get three outs for getting up two runs. But the second gripe is that all of a sudden now, the two guys you called up, they both look very rough in their first outing. So the bigger question is that you didn't allocate your roster composition properly because you two guys in your pen that aren't healthy.
And they didn't look good. They didn't look good in their last outing in AAA, let alone their first outing in the majors. Yeah. That's what I was upset about.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think there is a gripe to be made that's more strategic. It's not just it's not just the actual performance on the field. It's that are they actually healthy? And so far, I know it's only one game, and who knows if Eric Swanson was healthy all year and he has that bad game, then we're not talking about this. We're talking about how Eric Swanson had a blip on the radar.
Right.
But it's the fact that they're both only one start and didn't look good. Yeah, that's a bad look. It's a bad look for whoever made the call to activate them off the IL. Yeah. It looks. At the very least, on the surface, that's a little premature.
Yeah. Especially since Drew Pearson is the one who got sent down. Exactly. How great he'd been to start the season, and if he's not there, and these guys aren't ready, it's tough to watch.
Yeah, I think we hammered it home. We hammered home the meat. Now let's finish it off with the compliment. Obviously, that doesn't include the full offensive performance this week, but as we already have discussed, the at bats did look significantly better. And the one guy that I do want to end this sandwich with and give him full props is the guy that now leads our team in home runs and third on our team in OPS behind fucking Cavendish and Justin Turner. But Cavendish, we all know, is hardly a threat. So the second biggest threat on this team, Dalton Varsho. Rob, I'm giving you the floor.
It's his guy.
It's his guy.
My guy. I'm just really happy for the guy. I mean, Dalton Varsho, he's always been a very good baseball player. People won't admit it because people hate analytics, and all the analytics love Dalton Varsho. People hate defense. Right. The old defense loves it. Dalton Varsho. Look, let's be honest. Dalton Varsho, he's not a good hitter last year. No. And the reality is that there's a good chance he's not a good hitter this season either. You know, he's a career OPS plus in the 90s. That profiles as a below average hitter. But at the end of the day, if you're a 90 to 100 OPS plus guy, which basically profiles as a slightly below par offensive player, complemented by the great defensive player that he is, you have a ball player. You have a 4-5 win player. You have the type of ball player that the Blue Jays traded a premium to get. And right now, I think my biggest takeaway is that do I think Dalton Varsho is good enough to be your fourth or fifth hitter moving back there? No, I still think he's a bottom of the lineup guy who can run into one. But that has a lot of value, as I mentioned. That has a lot of value.
Especially and this lineup.
At this point, especially in this lineup, and a lineup that needs power. Power comes at a premium for the Blue Jays. They don't hit a lot of home runs. You need home runs. He's got pop. And I think for the time being, he's got to be your everyday center fielder. I mentioned how you just can't afford to have you can't afford to have both Kiermaier and Varsho playing every day based on the way they were performing. Now that Dalton Varsho is clearly outperforming that standard that we saw just a week ago, to me he's your everyday center fielder until for the foreseeable future. He's going to have another lull eventually. That's what history suggests. But right now he's been massive for the Jays, and I think the big part of it is that he actually looked very good against left-handed pitchers. I mean, he had two good at-bats against Rodon. And that home run yesterday, it was Ferguson, right, for the Yankees?
Yeah.
Caleb Ferguson for the Yankees. The first home run he hit off a lefty since his last year in Arizona. So I thought that was very impressive. So, right now.
I thought he hit two off lefties this year.
I think he's hit two off lefties this year.
I believe so.
Is it this season, two
off lefties? In that series, I thought it was.
I mean, just keep going, Rob.
We'll check that out. But anyway, my final point was that, It's so nice to get a shot in the arm from Dalton Varsho, a guy who just the discourse around him has been so toxic since he came here. This is he deserves a nice series like this one. Four home runs, Four home runs on this homestand. He didn't like that. That was the big issue with him last year. He was awful hitting at Rogers Center. So I think if he can be a good hitter at home, that's a whole new ball player. If Dalton Varsho was as good of a hitter at home as he was on the road last season,
other way around,
totally different conversation.
Other way around.
Well, did I say so? Yes. He was as good of a hitter as he was on the road. Yes. Okay, my bad.
Right.
If that's the case, then we're talking about a whole new ball player.
By all means, Dalton Varsho, the guy that we got last year, yes, a 4-WAR player, but was not a guy that made the trade worth it. I will say that. And that's what this season can change all of that narrative if he could just be 100 OPS plus hitter. If he can be 100 OPS plus hitter on both home and away, this player is a 5-win plus player, and that's the guy that you traded for, no matter what Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Gabriel Moreno turn out to be this year or going forward.
Yeah, Rob, you were right, by the way, with the Varsho. Only one home run off the left. It was one was off of Dakota Hudson, and the other one was Ryan Feltner. So those were the other two. And then obviously the two home runs, one off Stroman, and then one off of Caleb Ferguson. So that's the four home runs this year for him. I think it was the double off Rodon that I was getting frisky about. So, but anyways, boys. I mean, you know what you're getting defensively from the guy. Let's be honest, he saved Romano's ass there in the ninth inning.
I was about to bring that up. He saved the game defensively.
Or game two, excuse me, of that series. And you know what you're getting defensively wherever the hell he plays. And if that bat can play a little bit, and for the love of God, don't put him the 5-hole and let him think too much. Keep him the 7-8-9.
Right.
Let him just do his damn thing. And it's a good sight. It's a really good sight. The confidence is flying for him. We heard the spring training stuff about our confidence is there for Varsho. Blah, 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 blah. Had a horrific start to the season, albeit like, 2 weeks? Yeah. And he's been awesome since. And if you're Mo. he had two home runs yesterday. He's hit four home runs in the homestand. And we all talked about, I think, Rob, you might have mentioned it to start the season, how his home road splits were horrific last year. He was great on the road, awful at home. Well, all four bombs have been at home to start the year. So positive regression in that sense, fellas. Exactly. But love what we're seeing from Dalton, guys. I really, really like it. And everyone else has to follow suit here.
Yeah.
But I will say, though, even some of the other guys, like Vlad, I know the overall numbers don't look great. I thought he had a good series. I thought, like, the at-bats were good. Yeah. Aside from that slider in game one where it was 2-2 and it was never a chance that was going to be a strike and he just swung all over it. That was bad. But I think he's taken a lot of walks. The heart, we know he hits the ball hard. He's always hit the ball hard, but I think the process has been good. The fact that he's taking a lot of pitches, he's waiting for his pitches. I think that this is a good sign for things to come. I'm slightly bullish on Vlad a lot more than I was about a week ago. And even Alejandro Kirk, he had his first extra base hit of the season on Monday. We finally have to stop talking about it. Thank God, because it's getting a little ugly there. It's been a good series for the positive regression guys. They were a big part of why the Blue Jays ended up winning it.
Yeah, and I don't know where we're headed with Rob's stat genius, but I know my stat genius also tends to the positive direction. So let's get there now. All right, and we're back. Cole Wiston, Rob Pentalma, and James Price here on the Blue Jay Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. I'll start, since we are on a positive trend right now with my stat genius. We're heading to San Diego. And obviously this team, especially this core, is not familiar with San Diego at all, the ballpark. But if you take a look, I went a little outside the box with this one. If you take a look at how these guys do, how our star hitters do in warm weather, you know, June, July, and August, how they do in Los Angeles, they have all been elite. Vlad and Bo have over 800. Vlad, Bo, and Springer have an over 800 OPS plus, or 800 OPS in June, July, and August. Vlad has an over 1100 OPS at Dodger Stadium. Bo has an 1100 OPS at Dodger Stadium and Angel Stadium. And Springer has an 800 OPS at Petco in his career. So, going into this Padres series, going to the West Coast, I think that these three players are going to have a pretty decent series, and we should be able to grab 2 of 3 again. Rob.
Can I jump in there real quick?
Okay, go ahead.
Bo's massive numbers at Dodger Stadium, I instantly got the flashbacks to the homers off of Kershaw.
In his rookie year.
Those were nice to watch.
So, Professor, you just mouse-holed it into Southern California. You didn't go into, like, Florida. You didn't go to Texas. No. You didn't go into Georgia. Like, just Southern California.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. That's where the game's at tomorrow. So yeah, I guess it's all that matters.
Yep.
My stat isn't quite as deep as that one, I want to say. It's just a bit. We just talked about Dalton Varsho. I wanted to save some of my ammo for this segment.
Nice.
Dalton Varsho has been terrific. We just talked about how good he's been. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But how good is he actually? Well, thankfully, baseball invented a cool little stat called WAR, wins above replacement. That will measure how good a player has been, all-encompassing, base running, at the plate, with the glove, everything. And there was a discrepancy last year. There was about a 2 WAR discrepancy almost, which is massive, between his baseball reference WAR and his Fangraphs WAR. His baseball reference WAR had him at 3.9, which is a really, really good player. Fangraphs had him at 2.1, which is a solid everyday player. So a pretty big discrepancy there. This season, however, Dalton Varsho leads position players on the Blue Jays in both Fangraphs WAR and baseball reference WAR. He's number two. Fangraphs has Yusei Kikuchi as one. Baseball Reference has Jose Berríos as one, but either way, both have him at two. A 1 WAR player on Baseball Reference, a 0.7 WAR on Fangraphs. So basically, at this rate, Dalton Varsho has been their best everyday position player, and he's on pace to have a 5-6 win season. So yeah, you mentioned there, Cole, if Dalton Varsho ends up being the guy who you mentioned, a 100 OPS plus guy with good defense, he can be a 5-6 win player and make that trade worth it. Well, so far so good. So far so good. He's been on track for that. He's been excellent, and that's exactly how excellent he's been, quantifying it through WAR. My favorite stat, personally.
I got one word to say after all that.
Oh, God.
Baseball. And isn't it nuts? I mean, my Love God, it. This guy was – he was cooked last year. Everyone's firing him away. The trade's a disaster. I mean, it's still kind of not great.
It doesn't look great, but yeah.
It's not great still, but look at that. Dalton Varsho. No shows.
Hey, the cement is still wet. The cement is still wet. You know, that trade can still – who knows? Who knows what happens this year? So far,
so
yeah, okay, Rob.
Yeah, no, and I'm with Rob. Like, despite the fact that his underlying offensive numbers didn't suggest he would be anything close to what he was in Arizona coming into the Rogers Center, which I said going into the trade, coming into last year, and I turned out to be right last year, so pat on my back. But this year, I did expect him to be better than what he was last year, because last year was horrific. It was his worst OPS plus, I believe, an 85 OPS plus on the year. And obviously couldn't even, you know, fall into some home runs like he did in Arizona. So I hope that at least this year he does that, falling into more
and
home runs.
And don't forget, too, like, his last two seasons in Arizona, like, he had a 100-plus OPS plus. He's 100-plus OPS plus. So it's like, it's not as if this guy was always a terrible hitter. Like, he has a track record of at least being competent. Like, even if you don't think he's...
It was his underlying numbers. If you look at his baseball savant, and his best offensive year, his baseball savant suggested that was a fluke.
Yeah, sure, but like at the end of the day, like you can't. It's hard to fluke that much of a sample. Even now, 97 OPS plus for like that's a almost a half decade sample. If we get a 97 OPS plus this season, we'd happily take it.
Yep, 100%. I completely agree. So I'm glad he's trending upwards, because with the way the Stars are playing right now, we need every bit of it that we can get. Okay, now for James to get his shine, we're going on the farm.
All right, boys. Well, there's not absolutely zero positives south of Buffalo, but regardless, we're going to stay in Buffalo. Obviously, you guys were there last, Sunday. You were there. You guys were there on Sunday,
right, yeah.
And I got a chance to talk to Ricky, Spencer. Let me rephrase that.
Addison.
Yeah. Addison Barger.
And Casey. Casey Kendall. Ricky Tiedemann interview just dropped on Blue Jay Center podcast or Blue Jay Center Instagram today. So go check it out.
Anyways, boys. That the offense continues to flow for the Bisons. I mean, they continue to rake yesterday. Not a big deal for Fender Horowitz. Just another three on base day, scored four runs. Not a big deal, right? How does that work?
Hold on. 1,100 OPS.
Got hit by a pitch or something. Oh, yeah. Still over 1,000 OPS. And then you look at a guy like Aroldis Martinez. And he's a guy that's been on the radar for a bit. Boy, oh, boy. 2 days ago, hit a ball 469 feet, almost 114 off the bat, grand slam. And then he followed up with yesterday hitting a three-run shot in extras to propel the Buffalo Bisons to the win in extra innings. And then today he's got another hit. He's got an OPS, just shade under 900 right now. And he's starting to feel, I think, 21? I mean, he's starting to feel pretty damn good. Barge had another couple hits. And walked three RBIs yesterday, 304 with a 935 OPS. And somebody who was talked a lot about last season, and who followed the Arizona Fall League a little bit last year, He was a big, big talking point from there. Damiano Parmigiani. I mean, he had a slow start to the year, but dude's hot. I mean, red hot. He had an RBI hit today. It's still going on right now. But yesterday, 3 for 5, scored a couple runs, 3 ribs, and I think he hit a bomb, didn't he?
Two bombs in the same game.
There you go. Absolute moonshots from him, and he's now hitting 250, but with an OPS of nearing 900. So he's starting to get pretty hot as well. I don't know, fellas. There's a lot of guys down south of the border that's...
Kevin Kiermaier better figure it out.
this offense is kind of poop right now north of the border.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do here, especially with a guy like Addison Barger, where that third base spot, it hasn't been a black hole to start the year. Like, defensively, no one's talking about it, which is kind of nice. But you're not getting... Like, I get the whole horned up for IKF stuff. Yeah, well, it's IKF. We know what you're going to get from him. Ernie, look, anything he can give you is a good positive.
Yeah. Well, Ernie's one of the guys, if we're being completely honest. Ernie and Daniel Vogelbach, and, you know, creeping in there is Kevin Kiermaier, but he's very unlikely to be, taken at bats away from, unless it's from Dalton Varsho. But Ernie Clement and Daniel Vogelbach are two guys that could easily find themselves getting replaced by any of these AAA guys.
Yeah, and you know they don't want
to replace. Let me go further. So right now, you mentioned there's so many guys that they're outperforming AAA. Like, there's so many guys who at this point, like, they deserve a shot, I think. I think, like, Addison Barger, Spencer Horwitz, Aurelius Martinez, at the very least, like, all those guys, I think, deserve a look at this point.
Yeah.
And there's two guys on the roster that are kind of blocking their way. That's Kevin Kiermaier and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Because if you just move Dalton Varsho to center field, which is what he's always should have been playing regardless this season, now you have an opening in left field. And yeah, you're going to see Davis Schneider, see Kevin Biggio there, but you can stick a guy in left field. You know, like we saw Chris Colabello, Edwin Encarnacion play left field. You know, and I'm sure Relvis Martinez or an Addison Barger, like I'm sure that's not the end of the world to have them be playing in left field there. And at third base, Addison Barger is playing third base. So Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, we know that he's a guy who started the season as the opening day third baseman. You wonder, and obviously, look, you sign these guys to one-year deals. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has held his own, not so much for Kevin Kiermaier, but I pitched this idea in our group chat. And to me, it's your lineup is struggling and you have guys in AAA that are hitting. They're hitting it in the snot out of the ball, man, to be frankly. Yeah. How much longer? And I'm not saying cut bait, but how much longer until you phantom IL Kevin Kiermaier and get one of these guys in here instead of giving them everyday looks? Because we mentioned the offense is not looking pretty. Well, you have guys that are proving their worth in AAA.
Yeah.
They kind of deserve a look, in my opinion. You look at the guys, how they're playing. Why, like, what's keeping the Blue Jays from doing this?
Yeah, well, it's the 2-year deal, actually, to IKF. It's the 1-year north of $10 million deal that they gave to Kevin Kiermaier. And here's the other point that it goes in favor of the guys in AAA. Outside of Aurelvis Martinez, Addison Barger and Spencer Horwitz are giving you the power from the left side. Both guys giving you the power from the side that you need in the majors because, you know, Vogelbach hasn't been able to get in there every day enough to even, you know, fathom, you know, seeing a sample out of him. But also Kevin Kiermaier hasn't provided you even close to what he was giving you last year. He's the worst hitter in baseball across all profiles on Baseball Savant. And then Dalton Varsho up until this home series, obviously, was Dalton Varsho. He's a career average, career below average hitter. So you need somebody from the left side who's going to give you a spark. Both Addison Barger and Spencer Horwitz can do just that, potentially.
I think Barger's going to be the first guy to get called up. That's just kind of my feel in the whole situation. Yeah. Left-handed bat.
He makes the most sense.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And he's been seasoned there in AAA a little bit more. I'm like, okay, like let's get this thing rolling here. Because I think Jays fans, if we're appeasing the fans, it's about getting a new face in here. When you did that last year with Davis Schneider, albeit it worked. But when it does work and it's a new face, the vibes are immaculate. Yeah. Everything changed after Davis Schneider joined the team last season in Boston. You bring up an Addison Barger, lefty bat plays third base, young fella.
To be honest, if you're going to do it, why not do it on the road in warm elements in San Diego?
Yeah, sure. And isn't he from out there too?
Addison is. Yeah, Addison's from Florida. Yeah. Well, he went to high school in Florida. Sorry. Okay.
He's a Florida. Yeah, so he's from the warm elements. He's not from California, but I agree. I would agree with you. I would agree that Addison Barger, his positional flexibility would give him the upper hand. Aurelvis Martinez, he's been playing mostly second base at AAA. It's not been good. He's made 5 errors in 10 games so far. Yeah. So I think they're putting him there at second base. He's not in a, I don't believe he came up as a second baseman originally. I think they're kind of moving there.
He was an outfielder, I think.
Versatility. Yeah, right, exactly.
And third baseman, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So they're moving him to second for some positional flexibility there. But so far, it's been definitely a work in progress on that. And I would agree. I think Addison Barger is going to be the first guy up. And I think, regardless of who you think the first guy up is going to be, someone's going to come up soon, I think.
Yeah.
I think these guys are just performing too well. And as I've said many times, like, the offense is not really – there's no justification for why offense looking how it's looked for the majority of the season should be taking away spots from a guy who's performing well.
Exactly, and they're doing it in poor elements too, which goes to show you that it's, you know, not all a fluke either.
Yeah, that's a great point. And obviously, you know, I mentioned that Pomegiani already has a hit today. Yeah, well, so does Aurelvis. He's already got a double to start the night.
Exactly.
And just a shade under 900 OPS. Now, the last thing I got, fellas, is – oh, crap, where do you go? Hold on a minute. Oh, yes, of course. What am I talking about? Ricky Tiedemann. When are we going to start talking? I mean, he hasn't started in 7 days. Today is day seven. He hasn't started since April the 11th. Today is the 18th. And Paulo Espino is pitching for the Bisons tonight.
Yeah. And so, this is twice he's been probable this week, and twice he's been pushed back. So he's obviously dealing with something on top of the fact that, you know, or what goes even more into the fact that he's probably dealing with something is his numbers to start the year, but albeit poor elements.
Yeah, so that's kind of my thought. I'm kind of keeping an eye on Tiedemann and when he gets his next start. I don't know if they're trying to ease the innings a bit by giving him an extra couple days off as well. I don't know if that's the case, but I think we're definitely going to keep an eye on the Bisons and see when he does not get his next start, or, God forbid, hits the IL.
Yep. I think that that was probably one of our best on the farm sections. A lot of dialogue so far in AAA, and give us credit when Addison Barger gets the call first. Okay, going into the Padres series, let's get underway with that to finish off the show. In Game 1, we got Yairo Rodriguez making his second start in the bigs against the knuckleballer, MLB The Show legend, as James said on the show the other day, Matt Waldron, and I want to mention...
Waldron.
He's been bad at home in his career, so hopefully that leads to success for the Blue Jays. We got Jose Berrios in Game 2. To be determined for Game 2, we're missing the Yu Darvish expected start. He went on the IL this week. That was supposed to be his slot. They haven't announced who's going to go second in that one. And then we go Chris Bassitt for Game 3 against Joe Musgrove, who the last few years has been good, except to start this year. He's been bad, real bad, over 6 ERA bad. Both Turner and Varsho have faced Musgrove. Both of them have been very good against him. This is also the start of a 13 straight game schedule for the Blue Jays before their next off day. So we're going to obviously talk about the bullpen when we get into this preview. That's going to be huge down this stretch. Rob, going to you.
I think that last point that you mentioned, the bullpen, that's massive. I think maybe now we can go back a little bit earlier and basically answer our question as to why there were so many guys unavailable, even though there was an off day today, perhaps because they're gearing up for this 13 games in 13 days, and you're facing against really good competition. You're going to San Diego, then you're going to Kansas City, pretty good to start the season, and you're facing the Dodgers at home. So we mentioned how it's good that the Blue Jays have gotten off to this great start against the good teams, but that's not, we're still right in the middle of that stretch. You know, it's ongoing. The stretch isn't going away anytime soon. They're still going to have a very tough schedule to round out April. And I think the 13 games, the bullpen, it's going to be very interesting to see how they go about it. Hopefully now with this off day, that's given Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson some more time to catch up, based on them being on the IL to start the season, and hopefully Chad Green, who was unavailable with the shoulder injury?
Shoulder soreness.
Yes, exactly. So hopefully they didn't IL him, so that goes to show that they don't think it's major. They think that hopefully with the off that he'll be good to go once the team gets to San Diego tomorrow. So I think that's the biggest takeaway. Yariel Rodriguez, also a major takeaway. How is he going to do now in his second big league start after having
success
with
this
first one?
Yes,
against a very good San Diego lineup, a lot better than the one he saw at home at Rogers Center when he faced the Rockies. So that's going to be huge. Jose Berrios, can he continue what's been a Cy Young start to the season? It's going to be an exciting series. The Padres, they're an awesome team for casual fans because they have so many good players. Yeah. They haven't really been a team that they're kind of like the Jays. They were a trendy pick the last couple of years. They haven't quite lived up to their expectations, but just like the Jays, they've gotten off to a pretty solid start this season. So it's going to be a really, really nice battle. The Jays don't go to San Diego very often. First time since 2013, since the Ramon Ortiz series, which we don't remember very fondly of, but yeah, it'll be really cool. So Petco's an awesome ballpark and San Diego is just a great city. So it'd be really cool to see the vibes there.
Definitely. And I think it's very important for this team to come back and win that series after the way the Yankees series ended. And then you have the off day to let it linger a bit.
A bit of a bittersweet taste.
You got to get right back on the horse.
Just based off matchups, I think it's a very winnable series.
It, without a doubt, it is. You know why? Dalton Varsho is playing, baby. The writing's on the mound. Let's go. Anyways, but yeah, it's so important that they get right back on the horse. And that's what great teams do. You know, and I said this at the end of the live or the post-game chat on BJC, I'm like, look, as much as we can sit here and yell about the bullpen, we can yell about this, we can yell about that. Every team, every year, goes through losses like that.
Right.
Every damn year, there's going to be those losses there in a 162-game schedule. You take it, but it's what you do afterwards that shows you which kind of team you are. You go
there and take snowball,
two or three you go out there and you take two or three against San Diego. People forget about that, kind of, because it's the Yankees. Yeah, it's a little different. And Rob, you guys mentioned how KC's hot. Yeah, they're frauds. Sorry, they're frauds. They're second best in ERA in the big leagues. Great, good on them. They're first in runs allowed. Good on them. They're 29th in strikeouts. And guess what? Seven of their games already? Yeah, they've been against the White Sox.
Who, by the way, is one of the two teams to be below us when it comes to runners in scoring position this year. And they have an abysmal, like, it is hard to do. 400 OPS against, or with runners in scoring position, them and the Twins. We're at 600. That's the gap between 28th and 29th and 30th.
That's the funny thing, right? Because you said, talked about the
abolish Twins. AL Central.
That was their first series of the season. They lost 2-3. They played the Orioles. Lost 2-3. Well, they swept the White Sox in 4. Good on them.
Oh, nice.
And they swept the Astros in 3 in a row, which
Astros have been bad, too. We just made them look good.
Yeah. They lost a series to the Mets. Look at that. And then they beat the crap out of the White Sox again.
Okay. A bit fraudulent. I like this. Kind of like the Rays.
Whatever. So you take the series against freaking San Diego, and you have a chance to at least take a series against KC.
Yeah, seven. There's seven games with KC in this 13 stretch. This 13 game stretch was seven. We bring them back as well after the Dodgers come to visit. The Royals come back to visit us.
Absolutely.
So basically, you're saying that the pathway to a successful 13 game and 13 day stretch is just go 500 against the Padres and the Dodgers and beat up on the Royals. I think that's what you got to do. Yeah.
No doubt.
100%. I want to talk about one thing, game two. It's a bone we wanted to pick. We said it in the chat, and I'm going to pick it. MLB.com, I don't know if it was MLB.com, but MLB Instagram page came out the other day, 2 days ago, and posted, you know, the top five pitchers in the AL Cy Young candidacy. Well, guess what? You left someone off the list, and not only did you leave someone off the list, the guys that you had on the list don't even belong in the list. Jose Berríos is top five in wins above replacement this year amongst pitchers in the entire league. Jose Berríos is top five in ERA against amongst pitchers in the entire league. Not even just the AL, which is what this post specified. Those five guys that they put in the AL Cy Young, not in the top five. Nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be fucking found. Jose Berríos deserves his flowers. He has not only been a Cy Young candidate this year, he should arguably be leading the conversation so far through three starts.
Absolutely.
Now, I do appreciate MLB for tuning into our podcast and listening to the Stat Genius segment about me giving all the underlying negative numbers about Jose Berríos, but he took it a little bit too far. A little too far, guys. Appreciate the viewership, but we need to draw a line.
Yeah.
Yeah, but don't worry, guys. He doesn't strike out a lot of dudes out. Yeah, bite me. ERA just over one, but the best four-game stretch of his career. But
here's the thing about that, Pricey. Here's the thing about that. It's only been one start. It was just the Houston start. The Ks for nine have been right around nine or over in all his other three starts. It's just been that Houston start that he doesn't have a lot of strikeouts in. So it's not as if it's...
We're talking about Gosman and Garrett Goldpipe horned up strikeout numbers. You know, relax, okay?
Yeah. I think that not only... did Jose Berríos really belong in the conversation? But obviously this comes before Yusei's dominant start against the Yankees. This post did, I believe. But Yusei Kikuchi is putting himself in a conversation for at least top 10 Cy Young votes so far through his first four starts to start the year. So I do want to mention this staff has been absolutely electric. We mentioned off the top of the show, they've been better than what they were last year, which was hard to believe. This series is very winnable, depending on how Rodriguez does in game one. I think that's the big question mark for me. And that's I think, the game that would, you know, turn things around the other way, is if you don't lose, you don't win the series, it's because, well, I guess obviously, but you would lose game one against for Rodriguez. I think that this Padres lineup is very good. They could get onto him, and that could turn out really bad, because obviously the piggyback option that we kept on the roster, which we're not going to get into today, was Bowden Francis. So who knows how that goes. But Matt Waldron, like I said, been bad at home. We got Jose Barrios in game two. That's all that needs to be said for that. And you got Bassett in game three on the road. Been fantastic. Joe Musgrove has been terrible to start the year. Very winnable series. You got to win game one, I think, in my opinion, if you're going to win this series. Okay. That's it from us for the Blue Jay Center podcast, presented by the Sick Podcast Network. James Price, Rob Pentalman, Cole Whiston. Tune in on Sunday for episode 8.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast Blue Jay Center on YouTube, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts.